This account forebodes the risks of drifting away from God. Remember, dear listeners, we are going to need God as much in the good times as we do when we're down in the lowest pit.
Welcome to Mission 66, a ministry of TWR and Dr. Luis Seau. Today, we're in the book of 1 Kings and the royal court of David and Solomon. You can follow along with your downloadable study guide. Pick it up at mission66.org. Let's join teacher John Matthews and co-host Esther Sisulu for our discussion.
We are currently looking through the book of 1 Kings, and this details the history of ancient Israel's monarchy. And today, friend, we are so glad that you are with us for this episode. Now, 1 Samuel dealt with the life of Saul. 2 Samuel dealt primarily with the rise of King David to the throne. And in 1 Kings, the first chapter began with the reign of King Solomon. Solomon built and dedicated his great and famous temple in Jerusalem. And now we move further along in chapters 9 and 10. Our teacher, John Matthews, will bring us today's theme, Faithfulness Amid Great Blessings.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome to Mission 66. Wherever you join us from today, it is so good to have your company. And here we are. We've been looking at the life of Solomon, the third king of Israel, and a man who lived during this time of peace and indeed prosperity. It was actually said that gold ran in the streets during Solomon's time, and silver was considered of little value because there was so much gold. And during this time, Solomon had built the Temple of the Lord, which was considered one of the wonders of the ancient world. And the temple, as well as his royal palaces, all done, constructed with the utmost care and craftsmanship. And he is living this extraordinary life of luxury at this moment. There's no other nation that is nearly powerful enough to threaten Israel. So Israel is the great potency in the world, certainly in the region at this time. And with that backdrop, the Bible says that when Solomon had finished building the temple of the Lord and the royal palace and had achieved all that he had desired to do, the Lord appeared to him a second time, as he had appeared to him at Gibeon. And what does God say to Solomon? Well, he says, I have heard the prayer and plea that you have made before me. I have consecrated this temple which you have built by putting my name there forever. My eyes and my heart will always be there. As for you, if you walk before me faithfully, with integrity of heart and uprightness, as David your father did, and do all I command and observe my decrees and laws, I will establish your royal throne over Israel forever, as I promised David your father when I said, you shall never fail to have a successor on the throne of Israel. And God then ratifies that which he had already said to David, saying, look, I'm going to place you as the successor to David. You are the king in this blessed lineage, the descendant to remain on the throne. But there's also a need for obedience, and that condition is made very clear, because God then says, but if you or your descendants turn away from me, and do not observe the commands and decrees I have given you, and go off to serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land I have given them, and I will reject this temple I have consecrated for my name. Israel will then become a byword and an object of ridicule among all peoples. God is demanding faithfulness and loyalty from his people, from Solomon, so that his reign would be peaceful and blessed, but not only his reign, but way into the future. And doesn't what those verses there say echo in history? And the Bible actually shows us the dark side to the king's victories, because verse 15 says, here is the account of the forced labor that King Solomon conscripted to build the Lord's temple, his own palace, the terraces, the wall of Jerusalem, and Hazor, Megiddo, and Gezer, many cities, all of them built with the work of foreign slaves. And the Bible says that Solomon conscripted the descendants of all these peoples remaining in the land, verse 21. And so we're going to notice that all of this growth and this glory has a price. It goes too far. When we look, for example, at verse 26, it says, King Solomon also built ships at Ezion-Geba, which is near Elath in Edom, on the shore of the Red Sea. And Hiram sent his men, sailors who knew the sea, to serve in the fleet with Solomon's men. They sailed to Ophir and brought back 420 talents of gold, which they delivered to King Solomon. And chapter 10 then tells us of something extraordinary about the greatness of Solomon, of his kingdom, of this golden age where people came from all over, having heard of the fame of his wisdom. Because it says, when the Queen of Sheba heard about the fame of Solomon and his relationship to the Lord, she came to test Solomon with hard questions, arriving in Jerusalem with a very great caravan. She wanted to know if all this was true. She came with these camels laden with spices and huge quantities of gold and precious stones. The Bible says she came to Solomon and talked with him about all that she had on her mind. And Solomon answered all her questions. Nothing was too hard for the king to explain to her. And when the Queen of Sheba saw all the wisdom of Solomon and the palace he had built, the food on his table, the seating of his officials, the attending servants in their robes, his cupbearers, the Queen of Sheba was amazed, because she never imagined all this greatness. She then says, "Praise be to the Lord your God, who has delighted in you and placed you on the throne of Israel." And the Bible continues describing the greatness of the kingdom and the response of the Queen of Sheba, because she gave the king 120 talents of gold, large quantities of spices and precious stones, and never again were so many spices brought in as those the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. Hiram's ships, well, they brought gold from Ophir, and from there they brought great cargoes of almug wood and precious stones. The king used the almug wood to make supports for the temple of the Lord and for the royal palace, and to make harps and lyres for the musicians. So much almug wood has never been imported or seen since that day. King Solomon gave the Queen of Sheba all she desired and asked for, besides what he had given her out of his royal bounty. And then she left and returned to her own country. So we see this extraordinary manifestation of this power, of this special moment when Israel was so elevated in the international order. And it says the weight of the gold that Solomon received yearly was 25 tons, not including the revenues from merchants and traders and from all the Arabian kings and the governors of the territories. So the nation of Israel was great. It had so much power over those around them. And this was the high point, the greatest moment in Israel's history. It says King Solomon made 200 large shields of hammered gold, verse 16. He also made 300 small shields of hammered gold, with 3 minas of gold in each shield. And the king put them in the palace of the forest of Lebanon. Then the king made a great throne covered with ivory and overlaid with fine gold. Now that all came from other lands. There wouldn't have been an abundance of ivory in this region. Probably came from somewhere in Africa or Asia. And it says that this throne had six steps, and its back had a rounded top, and on both sides of the seat were armrests with a lion standing beside each of them. 12 lions stood on the six steps, one at each end of each step. And what we see being described here is incredible opulence. And the Bible says that nothing was made of silver, because silver was considered of little value in Solomon's days. And the king had a fleet of trading ships at sea, along with the ships of Hiram, the Phoenician king. Once every 3 years it returned, carrying gold, silver and ivory and apes and baboons. So also these animals coming from different regions of Africa. And the Bible says King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. And the whole world sought audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom that God himself had put in his heart. And all of these visitors would bring special gifts for the king. And this was the greatest moment in the history of Israel. And not only that, but Israel had also become a hugely powerful nation in the international trade market. King Solomon, it says in verse 26, had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horses. Verse 28, Solomon's horses were imported from Egypt and from Kew. The royal merchants purchased them from Kew at the current price. They imported a chariot from Egypt for 600 shekels of silver and a horse for 150. So the chariots came from Egypt and they were put together with the horses, and they would make this export. This horse and chariot would be made, and they would then export the chariots and the horses to Asia Minor, to the kings of the Hittites and the Aramaeans. And we're going to see that God's goodness and grace is constantly over Israel at this moment, whilst they have their most extraordinary and the wisest king in history, making the nation reach this moment of great glory and importance in the international trade market. And so God fulfills what he had promised. But actually, there comes a but, because this glory was not properly acknowledged. And soon enough, we see Solomon's reign present problems and difficulties that will be a result of this attitude of not considering God and even despising the covenant, the promise with him. So much glory, but not always accompanied by the necessary obedience.
This is Mission 66, and we're here with our teacher, John Matthews, and I'm Esther, your host. And, you know, John, I kind of feel like Queen Sheba right now, you know, about to ask some hard questions to our knowledgeable Bible scholar. Really excited to get into some of these answers, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I'm no Solomon, that's for sure. So all the best with that, Esther.
Look, you have wisdom and you share a lot of that with us. But you know what? I really am so impressed with the answer that God gave to Solomon in response to his dedicatory prayer. You know, he pretty much said, if you obey and you follow me, you will be blessed. But if you disobey, you'll come to a regretful end. You know, that was the heart of what God was saying. And he even seemed to be hinting that the nation would at some point be taken into captivity, which we will later see actually happened. So do you think that this was some sort of prophecy of what was to come?
Yeah, I think it was. God said that if Israel disobeyed, he would uproot them from the land, cast them away from his presence at the very temple that was consecrated in his name. So it was a stark warning that probably seemed not only improbable, but impossible at this point in Israel's history. But God sees the future where we just don't. And as we continue in the books of 1st and 2nd Kings, we're going to see that this very thing actually happens over the course actually of several hundred years. Judah will eventually be taken captive to Babylon, and the temple that we've just talked about, its construction, well, that is going to be destroyed. So we have here this account of King Solomon all the while amassing this gold, silver, huge numbers of horses, military chariots, which was one of the things actually that Samuel himself had warned about back in the days of Saul. And so we are even in the midst of what in earthly, worldly terms are sometimes described as the golden age in apostrophes of Israel. Well, we're actually, what's the truth of this? Well, actually, is that this so-called golden age are the seeds of Solomon and indeed Israel's backward slide. And they are being sown right here in these words that we've just read.
All right, John, well, let's go ahead and have a look at what chapter 10 of the book of 1 Kings shows us. Because here now we come across the Queen of Sheba. And, you know, she's this woman who poses these very challenging questions to Solomon. Let's talk a bit about her.
Yeah, I mean, this is a significant moment, isn't it? Because really, because Jesus himself in the Gospels, he references the Queen of Sheba. Jesus says that she would rise in judgment against the present generation because she had come from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. But the Pharisees, right there in front of the Messiah himself, the Son of God, so much greater than any human being, including Solomon, whose greatness came from God. Let's not forget that for one moment. But the Pharisees wouldn't even listen to him, and he was right there in front of them. Sheba was in the southern region of the Arabian Peninsula in the area of Yemen. So Sheba had travelled all this different distance as a queen just to meet Solomon.
It also mentions the gold of Ophir. So where might that have been?
Yeah, good question. I think this Ophir is around the Horn of Africa, so somewhere near Somalia or Ethiopia. There were trade and connections with that region, and evidence suggests that southern Arabia served as a hub for commerce with not just Africa, but also India.
Well, that's fascinating. And I suppose that means that Israel was investing in international markets as well.
Yeah, it's a fascinating insight, isn't it, into the culture of the day. And even Solomon's ships, something that often goes unnoticed, they travelled great distances. These ships that were usually of Phoenician construction, the Phoenicians being excellent Mediterranean navigators, they had substantial maritime capability. So they travelled all the way to regions like Ethiopia, Arabia, possibly as far as India. Some even, Esther, speculate that these Phoenicians, in partnership with Israel, may even have ventured to southern Africa. I mean, others may have gone as far as the Americas, even Brazil. There was even a suggestion some time ago that something that was found in Rio de Janeiro was of Phoenician origin. But, of course, that remains unproven.
Mm. Yeah, it's so interesting to have a mental picture trying to place what the world looked like at that time and what was happening in terms of commerce. It really is interesting. But I do have one last question for you before we head to our summary. Now, you mentioned in your explanation that Solomon engaged in horse trading. Okay, so how did that work in this context?
Yeah, well, Solomon recognized, Esther, that high-quality horses were being bred in Egypt and also modern-day Turkey. So he would therefore import these horses as well as chariots from Egypt. Then he would combine the two, pairing high-quality horses with well-made chariots to create this sort of assembly line for ancient vehicles or weapons of war, depending on how they were to be used. And Solomon would then export these finished products to regions such as modern-day Turkey and Syria, the Hittites in Asia Minor, which is Turkey, and the Aramaeans in Syria, were also among those with whom he was conducting trade.
We'll talk about a global form of industry, if you will. It's so fascinating. And I mean, I could stay here for a while, John, but I know that we have a couple minutes for our summary today. So how can we get into what we've learned?
Yeah, well, let's do that, Esther. And the theme for 1 Kings 9 and 10 was faithfulness amid blessings. And after completing the construction of the great temple and indeed his own palace, Solomon then experiences a second appearance of God who affirms his desire to continue blessing the people, but also warns of the consequences for following other gods, for disobedience, for idolatry. Solomon's reign was partly marked by these huge building projects, including cities, fortifications, and this infrastructure, often utilizing hard labor. His international relationships, such as those with King Hiram of Tyre, played a key role. Other world leaders came great distances to seek his wisdom, bringing him gifts. The Queen of Sheba was the prime example that we've just read about, who ended up being overawed during her visit as she saw and witnessed firsthand the majestic displays and then listened to this man's unmatched wisdom, which of course was not his wisdom. It was wisdom that was an incredible gift of God. Did he always remember that? Did he always hold that close to his heart? Well, at this time maybe, but maybe not so much later on, and maybe that's why it waned. His wealth and his splendor, it included heaps of gold, luxurious items, this magnificent throne. But as I just alluded to there, while this reign of Solomon's brought him unparalleled prosperity and wisdom, there is a foreboding in the words that we've just read, because there's so much material wealth that might catch the eye. And even from the wisest man on the planet, whose wisdom comes direct from God himself, there's a risk, because even the wisest man blessed by God's wisdom has free will and has a sinful human nature. And that foreboding is something I think we would do well just to listen to and to take to heart now. We perhaps need God as much, if not more, in reality, subtle though it is, when times are good, as when we do in the lowest pit. When we're in the lowest pit, if we believe in God, we tend to run to him. Not so when the weather is good and things are comfortable. Perhaps that is our most dangerous time.
And that was our teacher, John Matthews, touching upon what we'll look at in our next episode of Mission 66, where we'll move into the next chapters of 1 Kings, and there we'll see Solomon's faith beginning to waver a little bit. Well, friend, we hope you'll join us for that episode. Thank you for being with us. I'm Esther. For John and our entire team, may God bless you.
That's it for today's episode of Mission 66. But before you go, make sure to check out mission66.org for your free study guide. It's a great way to get more from the Bible and to see how it connects with your life. Cruise through the scriptures with John and Esther, chapter by chapter. Grab your free study guide at mission66.org and be all set for our next episode. While you're at the site, shoot John and Esther a message or ask them a question. You can also become a Mission 66 Global Partner with your donation, helping Mission 66 get to more places in more languages. All the actions at mission66.org. Mission 66 is a ministry partnership of TWR and Dr. Luis Seau.